Welcome to Real World Rewind, a monthly podcast where we take a look back at some of our favorite movies from years gone by, reminding ourselves that entertainment is not mindless. Joining me on the show this month to talk about her favorite movie in the whole wide world, Disney's 2010 animated film Tangled, is my wife, Shannon. Shannon, thanks for coming on the show with me.
Thanks for having me, Blaine. I am so excited, as you know, because Tangled is my very favorite.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of fun. Now, as I mentioned a few seconds ago, Tangled was released in 2010. It was directed by Nathan Greeno and Byron Howard, written by Dan Fogelman, and it features the vocal talents of Mandy Moore and Zachary Levi, among others. It also features a wonderful score from legendary composer Alan Menken, who is most widely known for his work on many iconic films of the Disney Renaissance period, including The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, and Aladdin. I'm sure we'll talk about him a lot more later. But, Shannon, since this is your favorite film, and I'm not exaggerating, guys, it really is her favorite film. She
like
loves this
the
movie.
Best.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you came to love it so much and what the film means to you?
Well, I think that probably one of the reasons I connected with Tangled so much is because I saw it for the first time ever on my 18th birthday. And of all the birthdays that I've had, that actual birthday is one of the very best that I can remember. I had a really great day with my sisters, and we went and we rented the movie, and we sat down in the living room and watched it, and I remember just being awestruck at the end. I was just so happy that everyone ended up together and that Rapunzel had fought her way to freedom, and I think that at that point in my life, that was significant because I was kind of right there ready to go to college and ready for the world to show me everything it had to offer. And so I really connected with her just finding out all of these things about the world. And after that point, I watched it like 5 times that year because I was just so excited that there were so many things out there that I had never even known about.
So did you go buy it? Because I know your family doesn't own a lot of movies. Did you let you go buy it after you watched it the first time? Or did you
No.
rent it again?
No, you bought it for me.
Did I?
Yeah, after we were married. It came on Netflix shortly after it was released on DVD, which I didn't see it in theaters. I only saw it on DVD. We got it on Redbox. And it came out on Netflix pretty soon after that. And so I watched it as many times as time would allow. And then I guess I just kept like renting it because I wasn't very good at buying movies, and you bought it for me after we got married.
Yeah. I remember when we were dating, like one of the first things I learned about you when you realized that I was into movies is I learned that you loved Tangled, and you couldn't believe it when I hadn't seen it because you're the person who showed this movie to me. So it was like when we were dating and everything, I'm pretty sure me seeing Tangled was like a requirement for me getting married. It was like the person I marry has to love Jesus, meet my family, and watch Tangled, and probably love Tangled. So
yeah, definitely. We would have had some issues, probably. but I mean, yeah, I think that one of the reasons of that is probably just because I wanted to make sure that you were sane. And if you didn't like that movie, then I probably needed to move on. So.
And the great thing is, I watched that movie, and you still didn't figure out I'm not sane. So, yeah, you showed it to me for the first time when we were dating. But like when I saw it, I realized this is really like a hidden gem. I'd never seen the movie before. Of course, I'd heard of it. But it just kind of slipped under my radar when it came out in 2009 because I was also in college, 2010.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to fact check me a lot. Like, she knows the facts of it.
Well, you already said that.
I did, didn't I? when it came out in 2010, I was in college, and so it just kind of flew under my radar at the time for whatever reason. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. So given that Disney is launching a spinoff TV series in 2017... based on Tangled, it's obvious that the movie has some sort of loyal fan base. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it certainly seems like its popularity was eclipsed by Frozen more than anything else. And Tangled is one of those movies that if you ask just sort of your everyday person on the street, if you did like a survey, a broad survey, and you ask people if they've seen Tangled, they'll likely scratch their heads and they'll say, yeah, I kind of remember that movie. Or, oh, yeah, I saw that once. So I think you could say in some way that Tangled is a broadly underappreciated film, maybe even underseen to a certain extent. Now, I know you and I both feel that it's one of the best Disney princess movies.
Obviously.
That's come out in quite a long time. So let's flesh this out a little bit. Why is Tangled such a solid Disney film, such a solid Disney princess film that merits people's attention after all of these other films have come out? I mean, Moana's come out. It's a big hit. Zootopia is a big hit. Frozen, of course, obviously was a big hit. There have been several Disney films since then, but why is Tangled still worth our time?
Well, I think one of my favorite things about Tangled is the way that it presents Rapunzel as a strong, independent woman who is ready to learn about the world and who can care for herself. She's a little bit klutzy, but she gets stuff done. She and her frying pan and Pascal. And yet she's still open to suggestion with Flynn, and she allows herself to trust others, namely Flynn, because she's not like closed off and hardened like we tend to see with a lot of the current trend in female protagonists who, you know, think of like the Hunger Games and female protagonists like that who are, yes, very strong and independent, but they kind of have this jaded outlook on the world and they're not really letting anyone else in and they think they can take care of it and they also think that the world is terrible. But Rapunzel looks at everything starry-eyed and she's super optimistic and yet she's still strong. She still is willing to go out there and put herself out there and be adventurous, and still she trusts people like Flynn, even though she doesn't really have any good reason to trust him. In fact, there's a line in there where she says, "I've decided to trust you, Flynn Rider," and he says, "A horrible decision, really." And still she just ignores him and goes ahead with her plan because she has faith that it's gonna work and she believes that she can get it done, and she believes that he's going to help her, and she just goes ahead and does it, but she does not depend only on herself. She is willing to allow other people to come in and help her, which I think is a really, really powerful thing that many people now don't want to see. I think that in our you know, our state, we tend to think that we are very independent beings. And so it's refreshing for me to see a character who, yes, is very capable, but also is willing to accept help and is not annoyed by it.
Yeah. I think it also, they do a really good job showing how resourceful she is. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, she's trapped in this tower for 18 years of her life, but she reads a book or maybe two or three, right? I mean, she's reading all the time with the books that she has there. And she's also like mapping the stars, as she calls them, the lanterns.
Right.
Like she's busy doing things. She's
real stars. She maps the real stars.
Yeah, she maps the real stars too, because that's how she knows that the lanterns aren't stars. Like she's really resourceful. She's a very intelligent woman. But I really like what you pointed out. And I had honestly not thought of this. But it does. So I'm all for and love strong female characters. I'm a big proponent of that. and I think it's important because women have been marginalized in cinema and in real life for years and years and years. So I think we do need strong female characters. Mm-hmm. I'm not against that in any way. But at the same time, I think you pointed out something that this movie is able to have a strong, independent female character who's still human, right? Who still has weaknesses, who still has flaws that are real, that are there, that need to be addressed. And maybe the way this movie presents strong femininity is not quite as ham-fisted as something like Frozen or Brave.
Uh-huh.
Films like this, it seems like it's a little bit more nuanced, a little more thoughtful in the way that it's developed. So I think that's a really good point. What else? What's another reason that this movie deserves attention?
Well, besides just Rapunzel, there are lots and lots of other good characters that are, as you say, really well-rounded characters that have lots of layers to them, lots of different personality traits that we can peel off as we get later into the movie. And we see, like with Flynn, we see at first, oh, he's very cavalier and he's charming and he can scale walls and he's handsome. But then we learn later on that he was an orphan and he puts up this whole attitude because he is scared of what people will think of him. And that is something that changes our outlook on Flynn. And the next time we watch it allows us to really look very carefully at how charming and funny he is at the beginning and kind of be able to wonder, like, what's going on behind there? Like, what was going on in his brain as he said those lines, as if the characters were the characters. And we already talked about Rapunzel, but people like even Mother Gothel is a well-rounded character because she kind of embodies fear in a way that's interesting. I was thinking about how at the beginning of the movie, we see that she lives her whole life in fear of getting older. And so everything she does to preserve her youth. She very carefully covers up the flower and she sings its little song and tries to make sure no one discovers it. And then she continues to move in her life throughout fear, kidnapping Rapunzel because she still doesn't want to get old. And then she treats Rapunzel the same way and kind of gives Rapunzel some of that fear in the way that she had it. And Mother Gothel adds, like, it's not something that is coming to her anymore. It's something that she's like giving away because that's all she knows. She knows fear, and so she knows how to manipulate and lie and teach other people to be fearful. And so she uses her great knowledge of fear to convince Rapunzel to be fearful. And it's kind of interesting to watch the way that progresses from the beginning to the middle of the movie, from her being fearful to making others fearful.
Yeah, she's not really a one-note villain. She's not just screechy all the time and terribly scary. She can also be very sweet in a very false sort of way. But, I mean, there's that moment where they have their little saying, what is it? I love you more, I love you most.
Mm-hmm.
Right? When Mother Gothel's telling her that, like, you can almost believe it. Right?
Right.
No matter how many times you've seen the movie, because it seems very genuine. So she's not just sort of a one-note villain.
Right. Okay. I'm going to interrupt you for a second. I saw something that I had never noticed, but someone compiled all these different shots of when Mother Gothel says that line to Rapunzel, and at those times, she's like speaking directly to Rapunzel's hair.
Hmm.
Which I think is just interesting and kind of a funny little note that they'd add in there, that she still doesn't even really love Rapunzel that much. Like, she only loves her for her ability to keep her young.
Yeah. And I would absolutely agree with you. I think that there are so many well-rounded characters in this movie is another reason that it is a notch above many Disney films that we have seen in recent memory.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many well-rounded characters. And so when we talked about character development, there's generally a couple of different spectrums we can analyze character development on. Again, this is painting with a broad brush, but we'll say generally a couple of spectrums we can analyze character on. One, you can look at a spectrum of static or dynamic character. Okay, so a static character is a character who doesn't really undergo change throughout the course of the narrative,
mm-hmm.
right? The character is pretty much the same at the beginning and the end. They don't have some big revelation, some big turning point. They're not undergoing some coming of age process or anything like that. So Pascal is a static character.
Yeah.
He's pretty much the same throughout. Now, the thing is, you don't want to equate static with bad, because mm-hmm. good stories typically will have a full range of characters. They'll have static characters and they'll have dynamic characters.
Right.
So on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have dynamic characters, and these are the characters who undergo a great deal of change. We've talked about a couple of them, at least. We talked about Flynn. We've talked a little bit about Rapunzel. These are characters who change a lot and evolve throughout the course of the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way. We can talk about static or dynamic characters. We can also talk about flat or round characters. And flat characters are characters who don't exhibit very many personality traits. Right? They're almost sort of one-note characters.
Right.
They're not very complex in that sense. You don't see a lot of nuanced emotions or anything like that. And on the opposite side of that spectrum, you have round characters. And these are characters who are able to show a broad range of emotions. They can show fear, anger, love, right? They show all of these different things. So they're round characters. Tangled has many dynamic and round characters. And that's the sign of a very good story. So, for instance, even Maximus in this story, I think this is really remarkable. Maximus is sort of a sidekick character, right? He is a sidekick character. He's mm-hmm. he's a horse. He's a horse that acts like a dog. And in a lot of movies, we see these sidekick characters relegated to strictly just the role of the sidekick. They tend to be very static characters. They tend to be very flat characters.
They tend to be very goofy.
Right, they're goofy. They're there for comic relief. And so we certainly see a lot of that with Maximus. I mean, a lot of the funniest scenes in the movie are Maximus and Flynn interacting. But even Maximus is a dynamic character who undergoes a process of change. When we first meet Maximus, right, he's the royal guard horse.
Royal guard horse.
Yeah, he's the royal guard horse. he's a very, almost like an OCD horse. He's very very proper, and he's a military horse is what he is. He's not OCD, he's a military horse. He's well trained. So he follows these rules, he's got a mission, he's going to carry out the mission, and that mission is to capture Flynn Rider. And throughout the course of the narrative, as we see him interact with Rapunzel and Flynn, we see him change. We slowly see him start to grow as a character into someone who is willing to help them out on their adventures, and who is willing to sort of develop a friendship with his masters, if we want to characterize it in that kind of relationship, mm-hmm. that he didn't have with in the military, obviously.
Right.
So even Maximus, the horse, the sidekick horse, is not just a comic relief character. They're very well-rounded. So yeah, really well-rounded characters, strong female protagonists. Anything else?
Well, one of my favorite things about the movie is the way that it's animated, because of the really deep and vivid colors, I think, are one thing that really stood out to me. I love springtime, and so I love all the colors in springtime, and that, you know, that may be affecting my view of it, but seeing all the different shades and hues and varieties of the greens and the pinks when they're out there in the tower, and then when they get into the town, the amazing little flags and all the intricate details in the shop, and the beautiful sun symbol that she draws with chalk in the middle of the plaza square. That's one of my favorite scenes. I like to kind of just pause it there and look at it, because the colors are so beautiful, and that's really even just a precursor to all of the beautiful animation in the lantern scene, which, you know, everyone that's seen the movie knows that the lantern scene is the most beautiful scene, which it is. But there's just something about that scene that just makes you want to watch it over and over again. Like, if I could get a digital picture frame and just cut that scene into the digital picture frame and just play it on repeat all day, I would be a much more relaxed person.
Yeah.
It's just so, so beautiful.
Yeah. Shannon also, because she really does, she loves the lantern scene so much that she created her own phone cover that is the lantern scene. She cut it out of paper and stuck it in her little otter box.
Don't forget the shoes that I painted.
And she painted the lantern scene on a pair of shoes. So yeah, the lantern scene is, it's really beautiful. And sort of related to that, I think another reason Tangled is such a standout film is that, well, I mean, you and I are really big fan. Like, we love Disney movies.
Right.
We love everything about Disney.
Right.
We're huge fans. But we'll also be, or I'll at least admit, and I mean, we talked about this earlier. I think you agree with me. Tell me if you don't, that sometimes Disney films can be a little bit hyper.
Yes.
Right? Like, sort of like bouncing you around from place to place to place.
Just trying to entertain.
Yeah, just trying to entertain. And so I really appreciate how Tangled is...
Different movies, Blaine.
Tangled is willing to embrace some of the quieter, more somber moments. So the lantern scene is just a really, really calm, really peaceful, serene, and beautifully illustrated animated scene that just slows everything down. There's the scene where Flynn and Rapunzel are talking at the campfire in the cave. There are actually quite a few sections in this movie where characters are actually talking and having meaningful conversations, and it's not just bounce around to this gag and bounce around to that gag and that gag. So to bring up a somewhat recent example, The Secret Life of Pets, which is not a Disney film, was just the most ridiculously hyper movie that I've ever... It was just right. So hyper. It was like bouncing around from place to place to place and gag and gag and gag.
But fun. It was fun.
Sure. in places. You know, wore you down after a while, but it was fun. Yeah. But I love that this movie is willing to embrace some of those quieter moments. Lanterns, flooded cave. Even the moment where it introduces Rapunzel's parents at the beginning. So... those are just a few things. I mean, we didn't really even talk about Alan Menken's score. In fact, let's talk about Alan Menken's score for just a little bit,
because
you listen to this all the time, and sing it when you're not listening to it,
and when I don't realize I am.
Yeah,
and so wake up to it, and
so why? What's the deal with the score? I mean, Frozen had a good score, right?
Well, yes. Okay, I think that's one of the things is that a lot of people would argue that Frozen's score, or at least the songs, are actually better because they're catchier, which is half true. Frozen songs are catchier. Like, they just get stuck in your head. I mean, we could not get Let It Go out of our head for the last 3 years. But the songs in Frozen are not as deeply connected with the story, whereas the songs in Tangled...
Like, give me an example.
Like the troll song. Oh, the...
Fixer Upper.
Fixer Upper.
Yeah. Like, it does nothing for the narrative.
It doesn't really add anything. It's a phenomenally catchy song, and I find myself singing it often. But it's not really something that moved the plot along. Whereas a song like When Will My Life Begin, parts 1 and 2, or 1, 2, and 3, if you have the soundtrack. There's a bonus track. Really, the little things in life. It really, really helps you understand Rapunzel's character and how deep she is in this state of trying to make the best of what she has, but really just being bored and being a little bit discouraged. That's it. She's a little bit discouraged because she's sitting there in her castle 18 years later And, you know, she cleans up her entire space, living space, in 15 minutes every morning. And then she's left to read the same three books and paint and play hide and seek in a 200 square foot area with her chameleon friend. And it kind of shows that she's really doing her very best to work to make the best of what she has, but she's kind of at the point where she's like, I need more. Like, I need to get out right now. Like, when will my life begin? And I think that that is something that we wouldn't have really seen as thoroughly explored if there hadn't been a song about it, because you can fit so many things. You know, I'll play guitar and knit and cook and basically just wonder when will my life begin. Like, you can see all of those things in a 3-second span of song, which would not fit into just a random 3-second montage if there was no song. And so it really helps us explore the characters more. Most of the songs in there help us explore the characters and understand things about who they are.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, the songs in Tangled help drive the narrative forward in really meaningful ways, even as they're really fun. I mean, the songs in Tangled are really fun and they're catchy in their own right. Mm-hmm. So one of Mother Gothel's songs that she sings a couple of times, Mother Knows Best. And there's a little
Knows Best.
There's a little line in there where she says, she's talking about all the dangers in the world, warning Rapunzel, and she says, men with pointy teeth. And so then there's also this moment when Flynn Rider breaks into the castle, the tower for the first time, and she hits him with the frying pan and he's knocked out. She uses the frying pan to pull up his lips and look at his teeth, and she's like, hey, his teeth aren't pointy. That's when she starts to realize something's not right. So even in something that's really fun and playful, it's still used to drive the narrative forward in some really significant ways.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could go on and on about all of this, but another thing I would add is that Tangled is a very thematically rich story. There are a lot of different themes, and there are a lot of themes that are very, very well developed and worth exploring. So let's talk about that a little bit. What are some of the things you find most compelling on a thematic level?
Well, we talked about sacrifice, which I think is a really big theme in the story from literally beginning to end. The very first words are, this is the story of how I died. And we hear Flynn saying those words. And, you know, we go on to see at the end of the story that he actually dies. Like, he sacrificed himself for Rapunzel. And it was her love that brought him back, but he actually did die and sacrifice himself for Rapunzel. And I think that that's a really important thing for us to see, because it is the ultimate sacrifice.
Which he would have never done at the beginning of the film, right?
Right, because he was a different person.
Right, the first time we see Flynn, he's what, climbing off on the rooftops with the crown or whatever that he's...
Right, with the Stabbington brothers trying to get the crown.
Yeah, so we see no sort of sacrifice there. He's only looking out for himself. Doesn't he say that several times? I look out for me or something.
It's implied.
The sentiment's, I mean, certainly there.
It's obvious because, you know, he does things like leave the brothers behind and steal the treasure and try to get away with that without having to share with them. But then, you know, even by the lantern scene, he realizes, oh, hey, like, I don't need this treasure. Like, I'm going to go ahead and just give it back to them. And, you know, he winds up in trouble. But when he goes off and everything turns green and he goes and tries to give them the crown and then they tie him up. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
you know, he's just obviously changed as a person and has become much more willing to look out for others, because he would much rather have love, have Rapunzel, than have the riches that he has acquired. And because he also realizes that, you know, those brothers helped him steal the crown, so he's going to go ahead and give him their cut.
Yeah, yeah. And he actually does give the crown back at that point in the story before he gets tied up, right?
Right.
I mean, that's like a huge moment of sacrifice because we see this person who is stealing the crown at the beginning of the film, then saying, you know what, I'm going to give them this crown to get them off my back because, like you said, I would rather be with Rapunzel than have this treasure.
Right.
So it's quite this change for Rapunzel. So he's sacrificing in a couple of different ways, but all of the sacrifice in this movie is grounded in a very genuine love. And obviously, there's a romantic element to the mm-hmm. love, that's happening in this movie. But I think there's more than that there, right? Flynn is seeing in Rapunzel a totally different way of viewing the world.
Mm-hmm.
So when we see Flynn for the first time again, he's all about riches. He thinks that that's all there is to life. He sings in the Snuggly Duckling. My dream is to be on an island that I own.
An island that I own, tanned and rested and alone.
Exactly. So like that's his thing. We're going to have to bring Shannon in every week for a little bit of singing.
Rounded by enormous piles of money. Sorry, I couldn't help it.
So that's all he wants, is he just wants this money. But we see, when he interacts with Rapunzel and when he spends time with her, he sees someone who is genuinely enthralled with the wonder of the world,
mm-hmm.
and who also genuinely trusts people and cares about other people in a way that he just doesn't understand. It seems alien to him. So his sacrifice that he makes when he dies for Rapunzel is literally rooted in the love that he has for her. And so, for example, a lot of Puritan writers talked about, Jonathan Edwards is a good example, of the power of new affections, right? Affections are what we love. And what happens when we're transformed by Christ and the gospel is that our love of whatever we love in life, right? Whether we love movies ultimately, or whether we love money ultimately, or another person ultimately, our love is overwhelmed by a new affection, a more powerful affection for Jesus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we see that happening. We see that happening in this narrative. Not that Flynn loves Jesus, but his more self-centered and inward-focused affections are replaced by an affection that is outward-facing. So yeah, all these sacrifices are rooted in love. And of course, we want to talk about Flynn's sacrifice because he actually does die for her. But what about...
Big deal.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. What are some ways that Rapunzel sacrifices, though? Do we see her sacrificing?
Yeah, well, I mean, she tries to pretty much do the same thing that Flynn ends up doing. And she sits there being tied up and bound by very heavy chains for such a tiny girl and tells Mother Gothel, if you'll just let me heal him, I promise I'll go with you and I won't fight. I will, I don't remember the exact quote, which is sad, but pretty much, you know, she tells her, I will give my life to a lifetime of torture with you if you will let me heal him. And so she goes and heals him, and at that point, Flynn returns the favor and, you know, cuts her hair, which kills Mother Gothel, and, they both kind of end up dying for each other in a way, but they're both brought back to life by each other's love.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of princess movies obviously end with the wedding. That's the big event. We don't get that in this movie. There's a little short.
It's called Tangled Ever After. If you haven't seen it, go look it up on YouTube. It's fantastic.
It is really fun. But we don't get that wedding in the movie, and I feel like part of that is a way to focus on this idea of love leading to sacrifice in this film.
Right.
And also we get to focus on her being reunited to her family for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So it also picks up that emotional thread that was started in the beginning.
Right.
So it doesn't just skip over to the happily ever after, which is also something that I really, really appreciate. We can also talk a little bit, because this is sort of tied in to the theme of sacrifice. We could talk about the death and resurrection narrative that's built into this movie. So you sort of already brought this up. The very first words we hear in this movie, we hear Flynn speak in a voiceover as the camera sort of zooms in on a wanted poster, so we know he's a thief. He says, "This is a story of how I died." And so we've already talked about how he literally dies, but there's a double meaning embedded in this that gets at what happens to us, again, when we're transformed by the gospel and the power of Christ and the power of the Holy Spirit working in us to make us more like Jesus. And that's that, in order for us to be able to do that, for us to have that relationship and serve God in his kingdom, Christ did literally, physically die for us. But there's also this process of sanctification where, like Paul says, we die to ourselves. Mm-hmm. And Flynn does a lot of dying to himself, right? That's different from the physical death that he suffers. He dies to his old ways of doing things. We talked about this. He dies right to his old ways of doing things, and then he's literally resurrected to walk in newness of life, right? He's raised. He is literally resurrected a new person. Even Rapunzel sort of undergoes a kind of death in the sense that her hair die, her magical powers die, right? And right. And sort of she comes back a new person without these magical properties, and then without all the baggage on her parents. Right. So there's a lot of death and resurrection imagery. Like literally when Rapunzel's hair is cut off, it's like she's being born into this, she's inheriting this kingdom that she is the rightful heir of, right? Because she actually is a princess. So yeah, lots of death and resurrection imagery in here. You also brought up something when we were just kind of chatting about the ideas of loyalty and trust. I really liked what you said. Can you talk about that for a second?
Yeah. I think that one thing that makes me love Rapunzel so much is because she is so loyal. She's one of those characters that is not stupid. She's not, you know, just gonna go out there and see the guy offering her candy and just take it.
But she is a little naive.
She is a little naive, but she's not stupid. Like, she's smart, yeah, and she can figure things out.
Yeah.
Yet she is willing to trust. She makes a decision to trust Flynn, even though she shouldn't. But she is really willing to see how it works out. And then she's also just really loyal to whatever she does. She says that at one point, she says, "When I make a promise, I never, ever break that promise." And that's something that, though the line was a little bit overemphasized in the movie, kind of stuck with me because it's a really interesting character trait that you don't often see. You don't often see people that in the movies that will really, really stick with what they've said, even if it becomes inconvenient. But Rapunzel definitely does. She promises to stick with Mother Gothel if she lets Flynn be healed, and you know down in your heart that she really would stay with Mother Gothel for the rest of her life, enduring torture, just so that she could save Flynn.
Yeah, and that shows how much Rapunzel has grown as a character because of the way Mother Gothel has worked throughout the entire narrative. And we touched on this a little bit earlier, but really Mother Gothel bears a lot of similarities, at least in the way she works, to the way we read about Satan working in the Bible, or the way you see Satan depicted in something like the Screwtape Letters, because one of the names for Satan is the Accuser, and that's the way she works. Huh. She's an accuser. She accuses Rapunzel of always being too weak, you know, too ugly, not
just
lovable.
A little chubby.
Yeah, just a little chubby. So yeah, she continues to do that. So can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, well, I think that Mother Gothel, once again, she's really the embodiment of fear. And one of the major ways in which she works is convincing Rapunzel that she needs to stay where she is by using fear. Just like the way that Satan convinces us often that we can't get out of what we're in, or we shouldn't try to do something because, you know, what if we're not good enough? Or, well, I don't think I could take that kind of rejection. Or, what if I die? Or what if all of these things happen? And even you see that with Rapunzel, when she's out there initially, right after Flynn takes her out, and she's going through the whole scene where she's, I'm never going back. I'm a horrible person. I need to go back. This would crush her. I'm so free. Like, she is trying to fight her inner self, telling herself, you know, I can do this. Like, I'm independent and it's okay. But then there's that fear that Mother Gothel really, really rooted down in her, that keeps pushing her, or pulling her back rather, saying, you can't do this. Like, there's no way you're going to be chubby, and no one's going to like you. And Mother Gothel just keeps coming back to that fear, keeps trying to trap Rapunzel in her state of sadness through the use of fear. And even in the reprise of Mother Knows Best, when Rapunzel says, I think he likes me, and Mother Gothel says, please, Rapunzel, that's demented. Why would he like you? Come on now, really. Not that I know that song or anything. but she even tries, as a last attempt, to continue to use that fear and get Rapunzel to come back by saying, like, why would you think that would work? Like, that's stupid. And so that's one of the ways in which Mother Gothel really, manipulated Rapunzel and got her where she was, but was by convincing her that she couldn't do any better. And that's really similar, I think, in a way, to what Satan does with our fears. You know, we get caught in something, we get caught up in lying or in stealing or in being prideful. And we think about it sometimes and we're like, you know, I should probably go apologize. I should probably stop. And then often we'll have Satan there telling us, no, it's okay. Like, you don't want to apologize, because then you might, you know, lose that friend, because they probably didn't notice. So you shouldn't say anything. You should just keep doing it. And that kind of little voice in our head that tells us that it's okay what we're doing, we shouldn't venture out, is kind of similar to the way that Mother Gothel treats Rapunzel.
There's a line in one of my favorite contemporary hymns, Before the Throne, that says, when Satan tempts me to despair and tells me of the guilt within, upward I look and see him there who made an end to all my sin. And I love that song. And I think that Tangled, through the interaction between Mother Gothel and Rapunzel, really gets at and points to what it looks like and how liberating it is to be freed from those sorts of constant accusations.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case for Christians and people who follow Jesus, like, those accusations are baseless because of Christ. And so I think Tangled gets at and points to that ultimate hope. So we've talked about Tangled plenty. Is there anything that briefly you want to mention before we wrap up?
Well, in the new TV show, apparently Rapunzel's going to have her hair back. So that's going to be interesting to see what explanation they come up with for that.
Right, because the new TV show is going to be called Before Ever After. And Ever After is that short we talked about where they get married.
Right.
So Rapunzel should have short brown hair, but she's not going to. So we're going to see
what on earth happened?
Yeah, why exactly that happened? And I think that's going to be a Disney XD or Disney Channel
probably show. Disney XD.
Yeah. So yeah, that's something we're certainly looking forward to in our household.
I'm so excited.
Thanks for coming on and talking with me.
Thanks for having me, of course.
And singing, because we don't normally get a lot of music.
Do you want me to sing us an outro?
You want to sing us?
Just fade me out as I sing.
Well, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Real World Rewind. This is our final episode for 2016. We will see you all back in 2017. Please remember to like Real World Theology on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and then also join our Real World Theology discussion group, which is different from just liking us on Facebook. You can join the discussion group and get involved in a lot of good conversation about your favorite films. So please do that. I want to wish all of the listeners a Merry Christmas. Please have safe travels and be safe if you're traveling now as you're listening to this. Look forward to doing this again in 2017. And thanks for rewinding with us. Bye-bye.
Like everybody else, I've got a dream. Hey!
This podcast has been a Real World Theology production. For more information, check out realworldtheology.com. And thanks for listening.
Now this is podcasting. Woo!